Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
Hey, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Katie, HRN Executive Director, and I'm so excited to share with you our coverage from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival.
We are here live today at Charleston Wine and Food.
Join us as we talk all things food.
Come to Charleston, eat some seafood. Eat all of the seafood.
Chicken fried chicken with chorizo steak and salsa verde mashed potatoes.
So quintessentially like Southern fare at its finest.
And have important conversations.
We're also talking about professional women in restaurants and how underrepresented they are, people of color in restaurants, and how they're not talked about.
We get real with Food Network's Manit Chauhan.
Balance is BS. I was told that I wasn't going to be bleeped out.
And find out about raising sugarcane with Chef Sean Brock.
It's like being Indiana Jones or something. You never know what you're going to find.
You'll come away inspired by the power of food and the food scene in Charleston. Here's Dr. Jessica B. Harris.
Food is constantly in flux. Food is always moving. Food is the only real lingua franca that we have that allows us to connect with other folks.
So tune in to Heritage Radio Network on tour at heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't go wrong.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair on Heritage Radio Network. I am Amanda Dell.
And I'm Kimberly Chow. We are the co-hosts of Recommended Reading. We are also the co-directors of Food Book Fair, a bi-coastal and biannual festival of writing about eating, most recently in sunny Los Angeles. But we're back in cold and crisp New York City, broadcasting out of the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn on the vernal equinox. Happy spring, everybody.
Happy spring. We're expecting apparently about a foot of snow tomorrow here in New York, so that seems fitting. But I just want to give a quick shout out to Erin Fairbanks, the former executive director of Heritage Radio Network. She slid in here when we were gone and hosted a show for us, so thanks, Erin. And it feels amazing to be back in our booth and hosting Recommended Reading. And we could not be happier to welcome our very good friend later on in the show, Mira Evnine. She is a culinary Jill of all trades, and she specializes in all things around the table. We'll be talking to her later on about some of her most recent projects, what she has next up, and also hearing what she's reading, watching, or listening to.
First of all, I'm going to ask you, Amanda, what you've been reading, watching, and listening to, and you're going to ask me the same question, because we've both been traveling a little bit. We've been in L.A. You were a little bit farther afield. Maybe we're both dealing with the weather change and also about to hunker down if the snowstorm's going to happen, so I'm preparing my Netflix queue.
Totally. I love that you now have a Netflix queue, which we can get into hopefully later, but
I hate everything, though. What?
Like, this
I
is
just
a
hate
new
watch
thing for you.
Ugly Delicious.
Well, we'll get into that later, I think. Yeah, excited to share what I've been consuming on the media front lately, because I did have a little bit of time as I was traveling. Right now, the first thing on my list is preparing for Passover, which is coming up in a couple weeks, a week and a half or so. And I am going to be graciously hosted by my family, but I know I will have to pull my own weight in terms of cooking and bring a bunch of food. So I was doing some deep thinking about what I wanted to bring, and I haven't been feeling the meat lately. Meat is like kind of something that you more traditionally serve at Passover, like brisket, or some people, serve like even chicken, roast chicken. And I don't know, I was kind of like not feeling those vibes. So I had to go and check in with one of my favorite books, the Bible, I think, of Jewish cooking. It's called The Book of Jewish Food by Claudia Rodin. And It's a extremely comprehensive book of recipes, but also history. Mm-hmm. And she focuses a lot on Jewish foods of the diaspora. So there's a lot of like Egyptian recipes, Moroccan, North African, Yemenite. And there's some pretty inspiring food in here. And so I was kind of feeling fish. So I just did a deep dive into her book and started looking up some fish recipes. And there's a short essay in the fish chapter that I found particularly interesting. She goes on to share that her uncle was a Kabbalist and people went to him for amulets and good luck charms. He would draw a fish on a piece of paper and write a message in it and give it to them. I was struck, this is Claudia saying, I was struck by the idea that fish were full of fel, beneficial virtues. So I'm going to pass those virtues along to my family by cooking a beautiful, fresh spring fish dish.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I've been reading that, and I also got to catch the first episode of the Christiane Amanpour new show on CNN. Let me just get the title correctly. It's produced by 0.0, Anthony mm-hmm. Bourdain's production company. It's called Sex and Love Around the World. Just, you know, my casual viewing by myself in my apartment, turning it on. The first episode took place in Japan, and it explores by having one-on-one or group interviews with people from each particular country that they're going to go to. I think Japan has been the only episode that's been released about how they view love and sex in relationships. And people are actually quite candid about revealing their own, you know, talking about their own relationships and what is the cultural norm in their country. So I found that the Japanese show about Japan pretty fascinating. Mm.
Any revelations you want to pass on to our American audience?
I think they were very, very honest and upfront about being in a marriage that is sexless and that there's not necessarily a stigma attached to that. Mm. And I think that, you know, a sexless marriage might be something that in one way or another could be common to many different countries or types or, you know, marriages eventually. But I think it's not something that's talked about as openly. Mm. So I found that quite interesting.
How do we watch the show? Where do we find it?
It's like on CNN Go. Okay. If you stream, if you have a like a internet subscription or cable subscription, you can sign on like through your provider to CNN Go.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of what's been keeping me up at night. So what's on your nightstand?
I finally started to try to watch Ugly Delicious, or I've been sort of trying to watch it off and on since we were in LA for Food Book Fair LA. It aesthetically does not appeal to me.
Okay.
I do not find the people who are the leads on the show particularly charismatic either, but I'm trying to get into it. So if only to better talk about it, I have to see it first. I did watch the fried chicken episode in full, which does explore the politics and the legacy of Southern food or Black Southern food specifically. And they get into that a little bit. I think in ways that mainstream television does not always. And I think that's commendable. Do I think it's delivered well? I don't know. It did make me really want to eat fried chicken. So this weekend in my neighborhood, I've had a few friends that are in town staying in Crown Heights, Prospect Heights, where I live, and catching up with some friends that have been traveling and live in that neighborhood, and that's where I live. So we've been gathering at each other's houses a lot. And after a hungover afternoon, after one of those days, with my neighbor Kate, we were on a walk to the grocery store, but ended up eating fried chicken with rice and peas and cabbage at Triple D's Bakery in Crown Heights on Washington Avenue. Highly recommend.
How was it?
It was a special. It was good. I mean, I think it would have been better if we weren't walking in at like 4 o'clock and it was the last three pieces of chicken on the under the heat lamp, you know?
Yeah.
Still good. Mm. Still would eat it again.
Yeah, I watched that show. I don't know if I'm quite ready to comment on it yet, but I thought what was interesting about it was that when ordering the fried chicken, which I guess I had never experienced, because maybe when I had ordered it, it was like more in a bucket style or a platter. But they would ask,
white,
do you want...
Dark?
Yes.
Of course.
And it was so polarizing. Who would you... Like, people had a definite... They had their mind made up about
what's your order.
That's so hard. I'll tell you what I don't like. I don't like the drumstick.
Why don't you like the drumstick?
I don't know.
I hear Rihanna. I hear that Rihanna only eats the drumstick.
Oh, shit. Bad girl
curry,
Riri?
Though.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Bad gal Riri only eats the drumstick.
Bad gal Riri. Okay. Well, anything else?
I like the drumstick.
That you've been...
I like a mix, though.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I'm saying.
I want one piece white, one piece dark. I only started eating fried chicken again this year, so I'm really excited about it.
Make up for lost time.
I'm making up for lost time. I'm eating both the white and the dark. We're going to ask Mira Evnine what her go-to combo is. Mira, welcome to the show.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
Hi.
Before we get into your media queue, let's get into your chicken queue.
And if y'all don't know, Mira is an amazing Jill of all trades, as Amanda said. She's a trained architect. She's worked as a chef. She's a floral stylist. She's a food stylist. She's truly the hostess with the most S, if you ever get the true honor and privilege of being at her table.
You flatter.
And she once curry shamed me. Into making my own curry.
At some point, you know, someone else just told me that I also curry shamed them the other day.
Okay, Mira, so I know
Mira
it happened.
Can make everything from scratch that we know of.
It's all about perspective, right? Why do you think it's shaming? It's encouragement.
Totally. That's, yeah.
It's how a Jewish potential mother shames.
I thought you guys came from guilt cultures. I come from a shame culture, so I'm my mother, especially
it's a fine
susceptible.
Line.
My
it's
mother
fine
always
line.
Said the Jews and Chinese, not so different. So,
it's a very fine line.
Fine line between shame and guilt.
It's how you frame it.
But we're sure that Mira makes her own fried chicken.
I do. You know, I actually used to, I don't do it very often. I used to do like one big fried chicken thing, meal once a year on 4th of July in my backyard when I lived on Gates and had a backyard. And, you know, could have a bunch of people. And the fried chicken that I make is like a version of Thomas Keller's. From his ad hoc book, I found his tasted a little bit too much like air freshener to me. There was like something, or like cleaner.
An air freshener
what
note?
What was in it?
It would there. Well, so he does like a brine, but there's like a lot of lemon and some other things, which I wasn't so fond of. I think there's like thyme in his recipe. But the things that I did learn was like, I do like brining the chicken. And then the flour has like a bunch of powdered onion and garlic and some other things in it, which those are the only reason I have powdered onion and garlic in my pantry. It was like a new ingredient to me. So, you know, I miss those days. Hopefully I'll return to them once again.
Do you eat the white meat or the dark meat?
I like it all. I think it really has to do with like how it's fried, how much crust is on it.
Sure.
Because it's all about like the, for me at least, like the crust to meat ratio.
Okay.
Right. Like that's why people like one or the other. Yeah. Really, I think it ultimately comes down to like, also if you're that kind of person who likes to like gnaw on the chicken as you're eating it, like my friend once looked at me with such like a side eye because I was like eating chicken wings and like cleaning
get
that them
all
up.
Natural collagen.
Yeah.
It's free.
Yeah,
it's added value collagen.
Listen, the animal, like I don't want anything to go to waste if I can help it. So I'm going to enjoy all of it. So I stopped short of like my grandmother used to like suck at the marrow. I stopped short of that, but I do like to get everything off.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody knows everything about me now.
How you eat your chicken is... Tell me how you eat your chicken and I'll tell you who
thoroughly.
You are.
Thoroughly. Yeah.
What else? What are you reading,
read
though?
My chicken bones.
I'm going to read your chicken bones.
Read my chicken bones.
Are you reading anything book-wise, magazine-wise? Listening to some podcasts, TV?
All the things. I have been... Let's see. I listen to a lot of NPR. And then recently been listening to a lot of, like, Two Dope Queens. The New Yorker Radio Hour. I love David Remnick, if you're listening. Love to come on one day, do his story. Been loving that. There was a great interview with the guy who wrote The Death of Stalin, that new movie that's out, which I'm dying to see. He was also learned that he was like started writing. He was like the first writer for Veep. He created the show. And so the first four seasons are his writing, or he was the lead writer for it. So I have like a new interest. I love like hearing something on the radio and then kind of going down the rabbit hole of following that information. So kind of rejuvenated my interest in Veep until recently. I like everyone had talked about it when it was a thing and it was new and fresh. And now I'm getting to that slowly.
Would you recommend
it? I would recommend it. Yeah.
I've never watched it.
Well, give it a go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe during this impending spring snowstorm.
Yeah. When you want to take a break from sex and love. Love and sex. Yeah, and then I'm reading, for a long time I felt like I was reading a lot of short form. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like my work doesn't really lend itself to reading during the day, or by the time I get home I'm usually pretty tired. So I'd read like a paragraph and then fall asleep. So I've made a concerted effort to like pick up books again. I have been reading the Chimamanda Ngozi, Half of a Yellow Sun, which I've been enjoying. I'm enjoying it less than Americana, which I read right before that. Again, going down that rabbit hole and reading.
Oh, I love that.
Like all of the author's things. And then I'm kind of, I also was like only reading factual stuff for a really long time. So it was like a lot of New Yorker and a lot of New York Times and a lot of cookbooks. And, I'm trying to balance that out a little bit. That said, I am reading Butter. It's like a history of butter by Elaine. What's her name? I have the book here with me. Elaine Kosarova. I recommend that. That's interesting if you want to know about butter. Mm-hmm. I like butter. So, So that's what I've been reading. Watching. I don't know. I don't watch that much stuff.
It's totally okay.
Yeah. It's a rabbit hole.
But I have some things I want to go home and watch now, listening to the two of you. So thanks for the tips.
We need your take on Ugly Delicious eventually. And the fried chicken episode.
I don't know. I would rather talk about Half of a Yellow Sun, which is about the Biafran War, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think of Americana?
I loved it. You know, I kind of gobbled it up really quickly and couldn't put it down. And Half of Yellow Sun. The second one is, I'm having a little bit of trouble. I don't know if it's just, I don't know if it's the book. I don't think it's the book. I think it's just probably where I'm at with like the pacing of things. Before that, I was reading Elena Ferrante's, her series of four books, the Italian, or it's not a trilogy. What is it when it's not a trilogy? It's a quadrilogy.
No, they refer to it, don't they call it the Neapolitan novels?
Yes.
And it's a trilogy, but then there's like a separate...
But the Neapolitan flavors book. Is just
three. There's one other book, but it's sort of like a cousin to the series.
Sure. Okay.
I want to call it Bad at Love, but that's something else.
Right. No. Well, no, but in the Neapolitan novels, there are four in that like set.
I think it's just called the Neapolitan novels.
Okay.
The bonus flavor.
The yes.
Is more psychological turmoil.
Okay. Yeah.
Those books scare the shit out of me. It's like so like it like sinks tenterhooks into your brain. At least my brain. I have a hard time.
Yeah.
Good though.
Yeah, totally.
I saw those on your shelf the last time I was over.
Yeah, like, I was ready to bring them here and like pass them on to you guys, or to whomever was interested. But I realized that I had lent one of the four, which seems like a really rookie move. I feel like if you're gonna take one, you need to take all four. It's the family. Yeah. That being said, I did bring you guys some gifts.
Oh my gosh, this is the gift portion of recommended reading.
Yeah. Trying to one up all. Exactly.
Future guests, take note. We do accept gifts in the booth.
So I recently helped a buddy of mine shut down a studio space that we'd been working in, and there were some things left behind, which when I see books being left behind, I can't. Like, I'd rather see them being given away on a stoop. Then to the dump. So I grabbed a couple, which I thought were of perhaps some interest to you. There is Modern Magazine Editing here.
Whoa.
And it is
okay. Wow. And it has a really rad cover.
It looks modern.
Which is mustard.
Like
old is new.
Mid-century modern.
Yeah.
Other century.
I am sure that there's some good stuff in there for you guys.
Oh, there's in picture editing, there was a Venn diagram, so that's going to be pretty rad.
Venn diagram, they're always in use. And
yeah.
Like,
oh.
There's a postcard.
Whoa.
It's a personalized postcard inside. Oh, what does that say?
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe don't read that. I don't know what it says.
It's a postcard that's a Jamaican market scene.
Oh, nice.
Who is the postcard to?
It says, Dear Allie or Ellie, here are the something receipts. Thanks, Francine. And it's a Jamaican market scene postcard. Wow, this is a treasure trove.
What kind of receipts, though?
But that's it. The receipts are not here.
And then there are a couple more. This is going to be my like fourth New Yorker.
Maybe we'll gift them to Heritage Radio Network.
You can. I won't stop you. This is going to be like my fourth or fifth reference to the New Yorker. But there's like Secret Ingredients, New Yorker Book of Food and Drink.
Ooh.
Wow.
Edited by David Remnick.
Are you sure you want to part with this?
Yes, I'll part with it. Yeah, it's cool. There's that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to pass them down to Kim so she can look too.
I'll look at it during the break.
Okay.
Okay, and then there's just a few more. I brought you this. Wow. Kim, I thought maybe you'd appreciate this one.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's there's a hot pot in the
spiral.
Front. Yeah, spiral bound.
Wow.
Spiral Chinese cooking book.
Mm-hmm. And then I brought some stuff for Michael Harlan Turkel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
in the Heritage Network, Heritage Radio Network family.
Yeah. Keep it in the fam.
Amazing.
Wow. We got a lot more to add to our queue then.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So we need to take a short break, and then we will be back with the one and only Mira Evnine. We can talk about maybe a book that she's working on, which is pretty exciting, and her recent supper club community table event that she had in Brooklyn.
You make it sound so good.
Speaking
it
of
was
things,
good.
All around the table.
Yes. So we will take a short break and we'll be back with Mira Evnine. You're listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market, whatever makes you whole.
Welcome back. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair on Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit radio station. That means every single thing that we do, from broadcasting over 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, it's only possible with your support. So please head over to heritageradionetwork.org, click on that beating heart, become a member, and support shows like Recommended Reading and many others that can only be found on Heritage Radio Network.
And again, you can find us on Heritage Radio Network, but you're maybe also listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you enjoy podcasts. Please don't forget to give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you are enjoying us, and we hope to keep on the airwaves so you can listen for a long, long time hereafter. In the meantime, on today's show, we are joined back in the studio with Mira Evnine.
Woo! Hi. Mira!
Food stylist, floral stylist, architect,
very talented person that we're very happy to call a dear friend. Cool. And because she is such a talent and a hostess who loves to bring people around the table, we thought we would put together our own little table situation today.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
With a little snack plate.
If only you could all see it. There's cheese, there's crudité, there's and crunch.
It is a thing of beauty.
It is.
So, Mira.
Yes.
You're originally from the Bay Area.
I am, correct.
Talk to us a little bit about what it was like growing up there, and then what brought you to New York?
Well, growing up there, it was lovely. At least what memory does childhood. It's a beautiful climate. It's the landscape there is amazing. Every time I go back, I'm always reminded on just like, you know, even people's front yards when they're not really doing much to it are still really beautiful and have some aesthetic to it. But I was only there until I was 18. So it's changed a lot. Every time I go back, I'm always reminded of that. But it was a nice childhood. Lots of farmers markets. I remember going and just getting really excited when I'd go grocery shopping with my mom. It was either like a combination of being like low blood sugar and like also excited to like download the day to her, or like or being cold in the supermarket or something like that. But it was always good, always exciting and beautiful out, and those kinds of things that you take for very much for granted until you leave and get some perspective. And then I came to New York after school. So I left California when I was 18 and went off to RISD, studied architecture there for 5 years, and then came to New York because I thought I'll either move to Cuba, because I thought, wouldn't that be cool to go and work for UNESCO? And then I realized that would probably be kind of difficult. And the Cuban government, especially at that time, was like very difficult to work with as a foreigner to go and work there. And I gave up fairly easily on that idea. And then I thought, okay, my dad's English, maybe I'll go and live in London for a bit. And I was like, nah, I don't know. And then I thought, New York. I'll go to New York. So I landed in New York.
And you never left.
I never left.
Or you haven't left yet.
I have not left. I've yet to leave, yes. Yeah, correct. So that's what brought me to New York. It was graduating and wanting to work in architecture, and did that for a couple of years, and then the economy tanked, and architecture and building is usually one of the first things to stop when the economy goes down. So I had been working for an architecture office that was based in San Francisco. I was one of three people in the office, and it closed, and I went back to working my once a week job for Eli Zabar on the Upper East Side, where I had been working as a florist just once a week. When I first moved to the city and was interviewing for architecture jobs, I thought, oh, I'll go and work at a coffee shop. I'll find one like the one that I managed in Providence, Rhode Island. And
what was it called? The one in Providence?
Wow, I'm blanking. it was Coffee Exchange.
Mm.
Charlie was my boss there, and he was great and gave me my first opportunity to merchandise and move things around and upgrade the space a little bit. And there was, you know, that wonderful quality of community in a space like that, mm-hmm. because it was kind of like one of the main coffee shops in town. So you got a lot of local people, you had professors, you had, artists, everybody came through. And you'd learn what people liked. You'd learn that like a large dry cappuccino was annoying to make, but you knew the couple that always ordered two of them and like wanted it, you know, with skim milk. And, you know, just like, I still remember it, and it's, you know, 15 years ago that I did that. So, I looked for a coffee shop to work in when I first moved to the city, while I was interviewing for architecture jobs. And this was 11 years ago at this point. So there really wasn't a coffee scene like there is today. But I also think I was looking for like that kind of like smaller, slightly smaller community space to see some regular faces. And
mm-hmm.
So how did you end up doing the flowers for Zabar's?
I remember specifically going to a coffee shop that was probably like in the East 30s somewhere, not really like also understanding the neighborhoods quite yet. And because I was living on the Upper East Side at that point. And I walked in and it was like a new coffee shop hadn't, like, I think they were like opening in like 3 days. I walked in and I don't actually remember if I walked in. I think I distinctly like got there, looked through the window, and I was like, oh, this is not what I was looking for, and turned around and left. And then I walked straight into Eli's on the Upper East Side and asked if they were hiring. And they, you know, two managers there looked at each other and nodded. And I think I started the next day or that day, like sweeping up for them or something. But that was a really nice way for me to kind of keep in touch with this very Bay Area landscape centric and sensitive quality that I have from my childhood. And my mom's a landscape designer, among other things, and she's incredibly talented. So I grew up kind of already looking at foliage and color. And so that's how I started working in flowers formally. What else do you want to know?
Well, I'll just jump in quickly, and then I'm sure Kim has many pressing questions. How did the food component start for you? And how did you kind of find your own niche here in New York? And what are some of the things that you have done and that you are doing and look forward to doing?
The food niche, I mean, the food component to my work is always, it's kind of been omnipresent just because I like to eat and it's very self-serving. But I think I only started to kind of understand what it was about food in a different way. And I'm still kind of evolving those ideas and understandings of them. But I grew up cooking a lot with my mom. And it was, you know, I grew up in a Jewish liberal household in the Bay Area. And as liberal as my parents are and forward-thinking, it was still very traditional in a lot of different ways that I was like the youngest and the daughter. And I'd found myself in the kitchen mostly because I wanted to be there, but also because it was, I think, whether they were aware of it or not, it was kind of what was expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so just serving people and relating to people through food and breaking bread together was and still is big interest of mine. Worked for Chez Panisse in another restaurant before I went off to college. And then while I was in college, I worked for random food things. People somehow found me. I don't know. I kind of like fantasized about opening a restaurant the whole time I was in school. And then that didn't happen. And then working for Eli Zabar, I was doing flowers for him and kind of did it once a week just as a way to like interact with other people that I didn't know and get to know the city and make a little extra cash on the side. And then when I tried to quit because I thought, okay, I've just spent 5 years studying architecture and I should probably do that. I gave my notice, and within the 2 weeks notice that I had given, Eli came to me and said, I have a job for you. And he walked me around the flagship store at 80th and 3rd. And, you know, he talked about all these different things that really, you know, turned me on and caught my attention, you know, merchandising the store, helping him tell the story. It was like 600 employees and you're basically one of the only people who gets what I'm trying to do. And part of that, I think, was because I, you know, was fortunate enough to travel fairly extensively and I'd been to all the markets that he was modeling his market on the Upper East Side after. And we did that for 6 years. I was more or less attached to his hip. He would introduce me as the girl who, you know, did everything else no one else wanted to do. Very flattering. But in a way it was true. Like there was this gap that was happening. Like there were people, you know, it's hard at a company at that size. It's more or less like an overgrown mom and pop. And so you've got a lot of wonderful technicians who are doing what they know how to do, but if you don't have someone kind of connecting the dots, things get lost, mm-hmm. and it's a shame. So that was kind of my job, was to try and kind of help tell the story of what he was trying to do. So whether it was, you know, commenting on someone's cart and, you know, engaging them as I walked through the store on my way to the front and asking them what they were actually going to be cooking and like talk to them for a bit, or like show them a new product, or, you know, work on the signage to explain what, you know, what was going on that mm-hmm. season. I also worked with him to open a couple of new stores and figure out what actually goes on those shelves and figure out the merchandising for it and blah, 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 blah. So that was kind of my 6 years prior to working for myself, which has been the last 4 years. And I got to a point where I needed a change. And I kind of just free fell. Like I gave notice and mm-hmm. didn't really have much of a plan. And I'm still figuring it out. It's every day. It's like trying to figure it out because the landscape of food media is changing and it's just constantly shifting. So mm-hmm. doing the things that turn me on and make me excited and mm-hmm. Continue connecting those dots. Yeah.
We're glad we're in your stratosphere.
Oh,
we'll say that.
I'm flattered. Thank you. Happy to be in yours.
Can you talk a little bit about how your travels have influenced your work, whether in your previous lives or lives now?
Sure.
And you've gone to, and we talk about this because this is something we all love, going to places with such rich market and dining and
yeah.
cooking cultures.
Yeah. I mean, and that's pretty much everywhere. I mean, I can't think of a place that I've been to recently that didn't have that. You know, it's such a core, like, old, I mean, it's what's old is new again, right? Like there's nothing wrong with the model, you know, mm-hmm. like if anything, we're tinkering with it now and introducing Amazon and removing people from the tactile and interacting and connecting with people over food and making eye contact. That's where the problem lies. In terms of my travels, I mean, I was just in Mexico recently, Mexico City, which is always a joy. And the market there, all the markets are also distinct neighborhood mm-hmm. to neighborhood, and seeing how people interact with them there. And it's incredible. For me, it's a large part of market culture is very fascinating to me, but also just how similar markets are mm-hmm. to one another. And I think I'm always looking for the things that connect us mm-hmm. Because, yes, we are all different. We are the same and different at the same time. Mm-hmm. Touches, I think, you know, like food just touches on a lot of other things that we, you know, as human beings, as animals, we like tear each other apart. But I actually think food can like reconcile a lot and bringing people around the table to break bread. So like, for instance, if I don't know you and I start talking to you about what you've cooked mm-hmm. today, or even your question earlier about like what kind of fried chicken do you order? There's a lot of information in there that you can unpack. So I'm going off answering your question, but yeah, it's back to what you had asked. I look for the design, I look for mm-hmm. textures, I look for color combinations, I look mm-hmm. for styles mm-hmm. of interaction, flavors, all of it. I can never get enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, we're very fortunate to have Eden at your table during a most recent stretch where you were doing a series of Sunday suppers where you were making different kinds of mole.
Yes. Yeah.
Which we're going to guess also is sort of influenced by your time spent in Oaxaca.
Yeah. Not just Oaxaca, but there was a space that was available to me, and this idea of a Sunday supper is very appealing to me. It's not something that I specifically grew up with. If anything, what I grew up with was, Shabbat Friday night dinners.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, during the summer, I do have fond memories of having people from out of town visiting us and like just meals. At least when I was younger, having meals just seemed to like go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, if it was a Friday night, like quite literally, I would be removed kicking and screaming. My dad would be like, it's time for you to go to bed. And I remember, you know, hearing the noise from the other room and not wanting to go to sleep and being so exhausted. And so there's, yeah, just I think from a very young age of seeing people sit around a table and languidly, like really like taking their time between dinner and dessert. I remember traveling and where was I? Norway. And one of the families that I was staying with when I was a kid for a summer program, there was like an hour between dinner and dessert. And I thought, how wonderful. Like you get to digest and then you go do your homework, right, and then you come back to the table. Awesome. So I'm constantly trying to get people around the table. So this space had been vacant for a little bit, and I knew the kitchen there and I knew the space and wanted to do Sunday dinner that was simple and was essentially one dish. Mm-hmm. Of course I had to go and make it more complicated for myself as I always do. But for the most part, it was one dish, and I chose mole because it was a dish that, as it sits, gets better. And it's, I feel like everybody loves it, and it's not something that's easily gotten in New York. And it's something very close and dear to my heart. And so I did these dinners, and they kind of grew. We did three, and they kind of each time grew. And I thought, you know, I was like, okay, serving the last plate at 9 o'clock, I'll be out of there at 10:30. And we were definitely there, a group of us, every time till like 1:30 in the morning, talking and unpacking and about life and connecting. And ultimately a friend of mine who came to all three said, you know, I think I get why he's like, I'm not a religious man, but I think I understand why people go to church and connecting as freelancers, especially, and in the city where it can feel very disconnected. Mm-hmm. These guys were shopping from Ridgewood to have dinner. Mm. And they, each time, they kind of got dressed up slightly and like made an effort. Normally when I see these guys, you know, we're working, so we're getting dirty and like wearing whatever's comfortable. And they like had cleaned up beautifully. And
that's pretty cute.
Yeah. And it was BYOB, and just to see people sharing was really lovely, and passing plates and sharing the same, you know, communal plate of fruit at the end. And and opening clementines for one another. It was really, it's lovely. Yeah. So,
well, I wanted to say thank you, because it was actually really educational for me, because when you said you were going to do a mole dinner and when it was publicized, I had a really just like one specific idea of what I had mole poblano kind of in my head.
Sure. Like most people.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then when I came and had like a beautiful, like a little bit more clear soup as my first mole experience, right, I was like, wow, I really made me want to read a little bit more about mole and understand that it's so much more than one thing.
Well, that was like, that's a misnomer. The dish that I first served, I mean, the word mole is, it depending on who's making it and what region you're in, some people will call that dish like sopa de res, some people will call it like mole, something. Like, it depends where they're from. So for me, that dish is mole de olla. It's mole of the pot, or sauce of the pot. It has the word mole in it, and it was good enough for me. And
it was really good.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
I loved it.
Yeah. Kim, you came to one.
I came to the one where you made pipián, the green one, which is my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, it worked out well.
Is there a rough definition or a loose definition for mole?
Yeah.
Is there any required ingredients?
Chilies. Mm. Yeah. And it usually refers to a certain consistency, but it always involves chili, at least a variety of chili.
A chili.
So, yeah, I think that would be the correct, yeah. And it usually has many ingredients in it. It's a mixture. It's a blended mixture of really beautiful ingredients that are kind of like a greater,
sum of its parts.
Thank you.
Yes, the sum is greater than its parts.
Yes. So it's, you know, everyone was saying, well, is there chocolate in this one? And it was like, not every mole has chocolate in it. And like, if there is chocolate in it, it's like this small part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about like building flavors and integrating these different things together and toasting them up. It's a really nice ritual to make it.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that and connecting us around the table with that. Amanda brought up earlier that she wanted to talk about your book, which is another way of connecting people across tables. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about that as something people can look forward to as a future project as we ease our way out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then hopefully enjoy the snack plate before we got to get out of the studio.
Tell us about the book so we can get onto the snack plate.
Yeah.
Tell us about the book.
I'm working on a book with a really wonderful group of women and one guy. It's called Bread and Salt Between Us. And it's a cookbook for a Syrian refugee. This woman, Mayada, who was sponsored by Rutgers Presbyterian on the Upper West Side and has been doing dinners every once in a while there to help support her family. And she's, you know, she's not a famous chef. She's not even, like, had never seen a cookbook before this project started.
Wow.
She's in her early 30s. She's a mother of four. And wonderful. She's seen a lot of things and made her way to New York from Homs, Syria. And we wrote a book of her food with her so that, you know, people can buy it. And hopefully the proceeds of that will go primarily back to her. A small portion will go to helping other refugees as well. So I've contributed to that in the capacity of food styling and prop styling and recipe testing. And we've all kind of pitched in in various ways. So we're all calling on the contacts and friends and colleagues that we know to blurb it. And we've gotten some really remarkable blurbs from people. And it's just, it's pretty amazing. So that will be out, I think, fall of 2018. I don't know exactly the month, but it's in its final edit and review.
So. Wow. So it's kind of like, would you call it like traditional family recipes from Syria, or is it recipes would be made for a special occasion?
There's a mixture. There's a section in the book that, you know, says for special occasions, but Mayada is a mom. She's not a chef. She's a mom that's trying to get dinner on the table for her kids. So it's actually quite accessible, easy to cook food. There's some more complex things in there, like kibbeh or ma'mul cookies that are these stuffed kind of shortbread cookies with date mixture inside. And she's from Homs, which is different from other books that, you know, the few books that we've seen come out from Syrian kitchens. She's not from Aleppo. She's not from Damascus. She's from Homs, which is, if you look at the map, it's in a different part of the country. It's you can start to see the influence of other cuisines into it. So there's actually she uses ghee, clarified butter, quite a bit, which, as for someone like me who's fairly versed in Middle Eastern food, was something new to learn. And you can start to see, like, the, you know, you can close your eyes and imagine the path along the Silk Road or whatever from India and Omani regions and and United Arab Emirates, like that influence on her food. So it's interesting. I learned a lot, and there's so much more I want to know now. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
May we all be connected by ghee and mole.
Yes.
Yes. Amen.
Cool. Well, we're so excited to see the book come to life and get to touch it and hopefully cook from it.
Yeah, and see it at Food Book Fair.
Definitely. Definitely.
No pressure.
Well, Mira, where can everyone find you if they want to talk to you about
any of
the things you've done or working with you?
Yeah, that would be great. They can find me online on Instagram. You can find me at Mira Evnen, MiraEvnine, like the number 9, Evnine. Or you can find me online at the same name. Or if you go on to Heritage Food Network Radio, you can look at this program today and find me that way. So then.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I want to encourage all of our listeners to definitely find Mira. She's a bomb. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And
for
sharing
me.
So much. And as always, I learned a lot.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, glad to share.
And don't forget, you can find us here every week, 2 p.m. on Tuesdays, broadcasting live out of the back of Roberta's Pizza inside Heritage Radio Network. Visit us at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you enjoy podcasts. And don't forget, leave us a review so we can keep doing this good work. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.